TechLoad. Join us next week. Get ready. It's Andrew Rennie and The Space Show.
This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
As Sandra so kindly said, coming up right now is The Space Show. Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, China completes a crew swap on its space station, and Boeing prepared a first crewed flight of its troubled CST-100 Starliner spaceship. And we're going to have lots and lots of Australian space news. So, first up, let's go with the Space Show news. China has completed a crew change on the China Space Station. Shenzhou 18 was launched on Anzac Day with three astronauts. They docked at the nadir port of the Tianhe core module some 6.5 hours later, and soon thereafter entered the space station. They were greeted by the three members of the Shenzhou 17 mission, who had been aboard the space station since October last year. Yesterday, Shenzhou 17 undocked from the China Space Station and landed in the desert of Inner Mongolia. And the new crew is expected to stay in space for 6 months. Meanwhile, preparations are being made to launch a Long March 5 rocket from Wenchang, carrying the Chang'e 6 robotic lunar lander. That rocket is already at the launch pad awaiting launch on Friday at 5 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. If successful, Chang'e 6 will land in the south polar area of the lunar far side, collect samples of the regolith, that's the soil, and return to Earth. Well, in Florida, preparations to launch the Boeing CST-100 Starliner on its first human spaceflight appear to be progressing well. Launch is scheduled for Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. For the two astronauts who will fly this test mission to the International Space Station, it has been a long wait. So long, indeed, that there has been crew changes. The following interview was conducted in 2015 by NASA Public Affairs, and we're reading the questions in our Space Show studio. So in 2015, July, Eric Bow was named as one of the first astronauts for United States' commercial space flights. The first Boeing crewed flight was then planned for 2017. So the first question is, why did you want to fly these two new commercial spacecraft? The other commercial spacecraft, of course, being the SpaceX Crew Dragon. And here's what Eric told NASA Public Affairs.
To get involved with the new program of flying space vehicles. I got the opportunity, I was lucky enough to fly on the space shuttle for our 30-year history, you know, to finish out the space shuttle program, and I was looking forward as a test pilot to fly this new spaceship into the new era of spaceflight. One of the big parts of this new program is to go into space and to make it affordable not only for NASA, but to also look at it from a commercial aspect, because these companies are also going to fly with other providers besides NASA.
And that question was, does it concern you that you will be flying with the company astronauts? And the third question was, what's the role of the company's astronauts?
It's a big team that makes this happen. You know, it's not just the astronaut office. It's a huge NASA team as well as the companies themselves. And it's the team that's going to get us to that next thing. But, you know, as part of that team, obviously the operators, the astronauts, will have a big influence on that.
And how important is the United States' role in the partnership of the International Space Station?
We're part of a partnership, and part of the partnership is to have different abilities, and so the United States having access as being one of the major partners in the group is extremely important to the effort.
And what's your role in this partnership?
A big part of what I bring to this effort is bringing together the different parts and the partners that are going to be necessary to make this all happen.
And how do you feel about your involvement?
I'm honored to get the opportunity to participate with this new group and to work with the team to get us onto this next era in spaceflight.
Now, Eric Bow was named in 2018 August to fly aboard the Boeing CST-100 Starliner's crew flight test, then scheduled for launch in 2019. However, on 2019, January the 23rd, it was announced that he would be unable to fly due to medical reasons. He was assigned to be assistant to the chief for commercial crew in the astronaut office at the Johnson Space Center. Now, at present, Eric Bow works with displays and controls for future space vehicles. Now, we're going to have now a description by Suni Williams, who is the other astronaut flying this mission, when she spoke recently to public affairs about the changes that have happened to the crew since it was first announced in 2015. It's been a long wait.
Sunny, you had the opportunity to join the commercial crew cadre in 2015, so you've probably had the opportunity to teach and learn a little bit. What has it been like to see where it was in 2015 and where it is today?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I think there was a lot of doubt, actually, even a little bit before 2015, as we started doing some commercialization of space with our other partners bringing up tourists, right? So it was like, what the heck is this? And then we, you know, took it and ran with it with the commercial crew program. I think there was probably a little bit of doubt, like, how are these companies really going to do this on their own? You know, I can't imagine how this is going to happen. We, you know, NASA, of course, has the commercial crew program to provide a little bit of oversight, but the requirements were pretty vague to allow the companies to, you know, figure out all these things on their own. So they would incorporate creative new ideas and technologies in the way they did it. But there was a lot of doubt, right? And now to see our spacecraft ready to go is pretty amazing. I mean, we're ready. We're, you know, it is ready. The team is ready. To also see our, you know, our other partners, SpaceX, you know, launching people to the International Space Station is pretty awesome. So it does happen, you know. You know, and somebody had a great idea, a number of people obviously had a great idea to incorporate this and to supplement, you know, our space exploration, allow NASA to really do the exploration onto Moon and Mars and to take over low Earth orbit. And it's successful and it's innovative. There's lots of new technologies and ingenuity to making it happen. It's different than how we've done it before, but that's okay. It's the next steps and it's getting more and more people to space. So it's been an evolution. But honestly, when you think about it, it's since I joined less than a decade. So these are huge steps we've taken in 10 years.
Now, since 2019, there have been several crew changes for this first Starliner crew flight test. And Barry Wilmore was named as commander in June of 2022. And by the way, excuse me, Barry's nickname is Butch. Well, now, back to the interview that Senator Williams gave in 2015. And this was when she was named to be an astronaut with one of the two spacecraft, either SpaceX or Boeing. And then in 2018, she was named to fly the second mission of the Boeing CST-100 Starliner. But as we now know, she's now going to fly the first mission. So again, the questions by NASA Public Affairs, and I'll read the questions in the studio, and then we'll hear what Sunita has to say. So, Sunita, you have flown into space aboard both the United States' space shuttle and the Russian Soyuz. What is your reaction to find you have been selected to train for possibly two other types of manned spacecraft?
Well, I'm really excited to be part of the new commercial crew program and hopefully be a part of the test team that's going to fly one of these new spacecraft up to the International Space Station. I've had the opportunity to fly on a United States space shuttle as well as a Russian Soyuz spacecraft to the International Space Station as it was being built and then used for science. And I think this is the next step in engineering and development and research as we take our further step out of low Earth orbit into deeper space.
Will your past experience be helpful to your new role?
We have a collective number of years here in the astronaut office flying different spacecraft, and so we've come to this program with different backgrounds and different experiences. I think what's good about that is we can apply that experience to the system of the commercial crew spacecraft, both the CST-100 and the SpaceX vehicle. And hopefully with our experience, we'll be able to make those vehicles a little bit better and offer some of the goods and the bads that we've seen in the past with other spacecraft that we've had the opportunity to fly.
How has been the response from the private companies that are developing the new spacecraft?
The cadre of astronauts who are going to start flying these commercial crew vehicles will sort of be the face of the vehicles. And essentially what that means is that we'll be bringing the teams together, not only from NASA, but also our commercial partners, Boeing and SpaceX, as they put a face to the spacecraft that they're building. And they get excited about actually putting human beings into space in their spacecraft.
How are these commercial spacecraft providers helping NASA achieve its wider manned spaceflight goals?
We have a lot of goals in mind, and it's taken us a while to, I think, consolidate all those goals and form a concise path to get there. And the commercial crew spacecraft are a very important part of that step to get to our goals, which is leaving low Earth orbit and going on to deeper space missions.
What will the CST-100 and Dragon 2 achieve?
The commercial crew program will allow us to regain our capability of launching rockets from the United States with humans on board again.
Is this a significant step for the United States?
It's really critical for the United States to regain its own launch capability, and commercial crew program will allow us to do that. We're going to be able to be launching Americans and our international partners from the U.S. to the International Space Station. That's going to allow us to further our abilities, advance our technology, so we can build the next generation of spacecraft for the next generation of space explorers.
Now, it's been 4 years since a manned spacecraft has launched from the Kennedy Space Center.
I'm going to be really excited when we get to put people on spacecraft at Kennedy Space Center. It's going to be pretty amazing for our whole country. It's actually going to be pretty amazing for the whole world when you think of the implications of this advanced technology in a spacecraft.
How important is this for astronaut morale?
I remember when I launched from Kennedy the first time on a U.S. space shuttle, and it was pretty amazing. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like after this long period of time to get back on a spacecraft at Kennedy and have all family and friends and people from all over the country watching. That's going to be pretty special. I think we've lost a little bit of that in the last couple of years just because we are launching from so far away in Kazakhstan with the Russian space program. And so bringing back home will bring that back home to everybody here. It'll be a pretty exciting moment.
Will working in the commercial sphere to test two new spacecraft be challenging?
A bunch of us have come from a test background as aircraft flyers. It is complicated even in that realm, so I can only imagine that as we get our feet deep into the commercial side of the space program, it's going to be pretty complicated.
What do you think you have to offer this new development?
Well, I have had an amazing career here at NASA. I'll have to say, knock on wood, I've just been really lucky in the right place at the right time. I've got to do a lot of amazing things, building the space station, then working on the space station while it's now as an amazing science laboratory. I felt like I would love to provide my expertise that I've gained over these number of years to anything new that was coming up. And the commercial crew program seemed to fit right in line. Seems just like the perfect fit to use that expertise to build a new spacecraft so the next generation of folks can fly it for a long time to come.
What excites you about this project?
For me, the most exciting part is going to be docking to the space station. When I was on my first flight and I was able to see the space station out of the space shuttle window for the first time, that was an amazing gold star, and that is really, really cool. So I think commercial crew spacecraft with really amazing windows, which we'll have to see the space station as we get closer and closer to it and get ready to dock to it. We know we've made it, and that will be cool.
And Cindy, do you expect the commercial crew program to inspire the next generation of astronauts?
This program, I think, is going to open up the door again for kids today to realize that the sky isn't even the limit. There's all sorts of amazing things that we can do. First of all, you know, make spacecraft, and then take spacecraft and do amazing things, make a space station, and then go even farther. I think this program will open the door for us to leave low Earth orbit.
And that was Sunita Williams, who was interviewed in 2015. Yes, way back in 2015, when she was named to fly one of the two missions, either on a Boeing CST-100 Starliner or the SpaceX Crew Dragon. Well, it turned out she drew the short straw, and she was on the CST-100. Program, which has had many, many delays. Well, a few days ago, the folks at the Johnson Space Center caught up with the two crew members of the Starliner, which is due to fly in a few days' time, and had this chat with them. First, they described the astronauts, and then they went on and had a chat with the astronauts.
Sunny, you had the opportunity to join the commercial crew cadre in 2015, so you've probably had the opportunity to teach and learn a little bit. What has it been like to see where it was in 2015 and where it is today?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I think there was a lot of doubt, actually, even a little bit before 2015, as we started doing some commercialization of space with our other partners bringing up tourists, right? So it was like, what the heck is this? And then we, you know, took it and ran with it with the commercial crew program. I think there was probably a little bit of doubt, like, how are these companies really going to do this on their own? You know, I can't imagine how this is going to happen. We, you know, NASA, of course, has the commercial crew program to provide a little bit of oversight, but the requirements were pretty vague to allow the companies to, you know, figure out all these things on their own, so they would incorporate creative new ideas and technologies in the way they did it. But there was a lot of doubt, right? And now to see our spacecraft ready to go is pretty amazing. I mean, we're ready. It is ready. The team is ready. To also see our other partner, SpaceX, you know, launching people to the International Space Station is pretty awesome. So It does happen, you know. You know, when somebody had a great idea, a number of people obviously had a great idea to incorporate this and to supplement, our space exploration, allow NASA to really do the exploration onto Moon and Mars, and to take over low Earth orbit. And it's successful, and it's innovative. There's lots of new technologies and ingenuity to making it happen. It's different than how we've done it before, but that's okay. It's the next steps, and it's getting more and more people to space. So it's been an evolution. But honestly, when you think about it, it's since I joined less than a decade. So these are huge steps we've taken in 10 years.
Butch and Sonny are the perfect pair to be the first to launch aboard Starliner. Both are seasoned Navy test pilots as well as seasoned astronauts. Both have flown to the International Space Station twice before, once on a space shuttle and once on a Russian Soyuz. And the Boeing Starliner will be the third spacecraft for each of them to take to the station. They have both stayed aboard the station for a long-duration expedition, Sonny doing so twice, and Butch serving as a station commander during his expedition. And both have performed spacewalks since their last spaceflights. They have been assisting NASA's Commercial Crew Program and Boeing on the design and development of the Starliner spacecraft. Originally from Tennessee, Butch Wilmore received a bachelor's and master's in electrical engineering from Tennessee Technological University, as well as a master's in aviation systems from the University of Tennessee. During his time in the Navy, Butch accumulated 8,000 flight hours in tactical jet aircraft. He completed 4 operations deployments, and he's also a graduate of the U.S. Naval Test Pilot School. During his time as a test pilot, he participated in all aspects of the initial development of the T-45 jet trainer and served as a systems and fixed wing flight test instructor. Butch remains active in the United States Navy as a captain. He was selected by NASA as an astronaut in 2000. In 2009, he flew as the orbiter pilot for STS-129 for a mission to the station delivering express logistics carriers and 30,000 pounds of replacement parts for station. In 2014, he flew aboard the Russian Soyuz to the station for a 167-day mission. And during that time, he served as station commander. Born in Ohio, but considers Needham, Massachusetts to be her hometown, Sonny has a bachelor's in physical science from the U.S. Naval Academy and a master of science in engineering management from the Florida Institute of Technology. During her time in the Navy, Sonny accumulated more than 3,000 flight hours in over 30 different aircraft, mostly helicopters. As a naval aviator, she was deployed overseas and served in leadership roles before being selected for U.S. Naval Test Pilot School. As a test pilot, she flew a variety of helicopters and served as a rotary wing instructor. She was selected as an astronaut in 1998 and flew 2 long-duration expeditions to the station. In 2006, she launched on the STS-116 and returned aboard STS-117 in 2007. And in 2012, she flew aboard a Russian Soyuz for another stay aboard station. Over the course of her 2 space flights, she accumulated 7 total spacewalks at 50 hours and 40 minutes. Despite these accolades, they are both incredibly humble and wonderful individuals who are very much looking forward to this historic flight. I was lucky enough to snag them both at the same time for a chat about their journey to get us to this point. So here's Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams ahead of their flight aboard the Boeing Starliner. Enjoy. All right. Well, Butch and Sonny, hello to you both and welcome to Houston We Have a Podcast.
Good morning.
Super psyched to be here.
We're excited to have you. So we want to start by talking about the Starliner spacecraft. What makes this spacecraft special to the both of you?
So, you know, I think the most special part is it's the first time it's going to be flown. So that's pretty cool, with people on it. So that makes it really special. And we've had a hand in developing all sorts of parts of it, from procedures to hardware to software, you know, the whole kit and caboodle with our many people on our many teams. So I think seeing it all come together is really, really, really special. And actually, hopefully, you know, knock on wood, being successful and going up, coming back down and handing the spacecraft back to the company and saying you're ready to put people on it is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the opportunity for a first flight of a spacecraft comes around only so often. This is the 6th in the history of NASA's human spaceflight program. And to take part in this and the progression from the early years up through, Sunny's been at it longer than me, but the early years to where we are now on the cusp of launching and all the work that comes into that development, like she said, our hands in every procedure, some alterations to hardware and software and be a part of that process and then actually get to climb up and ride that elevator up to the top level and climb on board. Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. Very thankful.
You both had the opportunity to fly shuttle as well. Do you see any similarities or differences that you would want to talk about?
Similarities. They're few. You know, I get asked, hey, when do you fly the shuttle? I still get asked that. Well, the shuttle was a lifting body, right? And it could only land. The only way it could land was on a runway. So we have the capability now that we are flying capsules. We only have capsules now. Throughout the globe, we're only flying capsules. There are no human rated lifting bodies anymore. So we can land primarily. We're going to land on land, but we could also land in the water. And, you know, the Soyuz lands on land, the SpaceX lands in water. It's its primary. So it gives us that capability and that flexibility, depending on what regime of flight we might be in or might find ourselves in. So it's not shuttle-like in any respect other than it has a crew module that is pressurized that can go into the vacuum of space. And that's about where the similarities end as far as capabilities and all go.
Yeah, you know, but I think one other similarity just is the heritage of the shuttle, right? And the history that they've built this spacecraft on. It's funny because the cockpit looks a lot different, but it also looks a little similar. You know, of course, things are modernized. We don't have half as, you know, we have maybe a tenth of the amount of switches that the shuttle cockpit had. But the philosophy and that rigor of how the space shuttle was designed and operated, I feel that in this spacecraft as well, you know, if not through the people, but through how we chose to design it and actually operate it.
And you're both experienced test pilots and astronauts, and I'm sure that that has gone a long way in the design of the spacecraft. How has your experience as a pilot helped in the design process and the feedback that you've been able to give them?
Yeah, there is a difference, and it's a good difference. I can't go in and help some of the designers of software. I can't help some of the designers of hardware, the engineers that do those things. They have a certain gift and a certain capability that I don't understand how to alter those things. But on the other respect, as operators, which is what we are, they'll go do a test in a test facility we have. The engineers will do that, and they'll go through the process of affecting whatever this test is from start to finish, and they'll say, it looks good. And we'll come in as the operators, and we'll say, oh, yeah, that's not right, that's not right, that's not – we need to change that. That's way not right. And that's the experience, what the experience brings to the table, that test pilot checking everything all the way down to what's the firmware in that box? What are we test? Is that the right firmware? You know, those type of questions that some people wouldn't even think to ask. So we've seen that, and we would expect to see that because that's our role. That's what we've been trained for.
It's a monumental project, right? So there's a lot of people who are focused on one part of their spacecraft. And we have the luxury with our control team to see it integrated and put all together. And sometimes that could be an area of concern because that integration doesn't get done before we get the product and we get to test it all out, right? So how everything works together is also something that us as the end user get to test and ask about, and don't assume just, you know, because it is specifically because it is the first time we're putting humans on there. Don't assume everything is absolutely right. If something doesn't seem right, ask the question. And Butch is awesome about doing that. You know, like if he sees something that, you know, that just doesn't, you know, sound right, or the timing on that doesn't look right, he will ask the question right away. We will dig into it and we'll find out whether or not it's supposed to work that way. Or, wow, that might be a little problem, and we got to fix that.
Yeah, integration's the main thing. She's right. We know if you think about a pyramid, the tip of the pyramid, the top, is where the operators come together and that integrated product comes together. That box with its software, that hardware box with its software, has been tested ad nauseum, and this hardware box and that software has been tested ad nauseum, and you put them together, and something usually is not perfect, right? And that's our job to find out where those little deficiencies are and rectify them. Right.
So what can we expect when the CST-100 lifts off, hopefully on Tuesday at 12:30 p.m.? Well, here's the flight plan.
we're taking the spacecraft from launch on the pad and going all through all the regimes of flight that it will encounter throughout its missions. Now, it may go and do other missions, but for the specifically what NASA is going to use it for is to and from space station, crew and cargo. And we're going to take it through the ringer on all aspects of that. As soon as we get off the launch rocket, the Atlas V, we've got some tests that were incorporated into the flight plan to ensure that the capabilities as designed function as designed. And we'll do that all the way up to space station until we dock. And once we dock, go ahead.
Once we dock, we have all sorts of stuff to do also, because we want to prove that this spacecraft can have can be shut down entirely and then started back up. But in the meantime, also, we'd like to make sure that it is a quote-unquote safe haven. You know, the space station has a couple little things that, you know, emergencies that it could encounter at some point in time, like a fire or a depressurization. And our spacecraft are lifeboats. So just like the Soyuz and the Dragon and Starliner, they'll be connected to the space station. If we have any problems, we can always go to our lifeboat to get away from the space station. So we want to prove that out to make sure when we send the next group, 4 people up to the space station, they can rely on their lifeboat. And so we'll be checking it out, making sure everything inside works. We'll be closing the hatch and, you know, just making sure that that is the safe haven and the lifeboat will be prepared and ready to go. We won't go at that time. We'll open the hatch back up again. We have other tests do just for cargo and making sure that data can be transferred from the space station to the spacecraft before we get ready to undock and then come home. And we got a bunch of tests on the way home as well.
And there's one set of controls. There's only in the left seat. And we're both test pilots. And if it's just me doing it all, it's one opinion of one, right? A data point of one person. So we're going to swap seats. And Sunny's going to get in the left seat. And she's going to do some of the manual flying as well, to get her experience, and maybe she sees something or notices something I don't, because that happens all the time in tests. So then that's something that we brought to the table. Hey, we want to do this. And the program said, sure, let's do that. So many things like that taking place.
As part of one of Australia's biggest banks, Bendigo Community Bank, Sandringham and Hyatt have everything you need. All the products, service and technology of a big bank, plus the personal attention and genuine commitment you expect from your community bank. If you want to feel good about who you bank with, drop into Community Bank, Sandringham or Hyatt and let us help you make the switch. When you bank local, great things happen in your community. Proudly brought to you by Community Banks Hyatt and Sandringham.
Did you know that Ripponlea Estate is recognised as a leading biodiversity hotspot within the city of Glen Eira? It is a haven for birds and other wildlife. Ripponlea Estate is now running bird spotting tours, providing an opportunity for the community to explore the beautiful 14 acres of gardens with a volunteer guide, searching out the diverse family of birds that call Ripponlea home. Please visit ripponleaestate.com.au to view tour times and to book your tour.
Right now, you're here to hear what's coming through your speakers. But have you thought about how you can be here to hear when a mate, colleague or loved one needs a chat? Ask, are you okay? And let the people you care about know you're here to really hear them, because a conversation could change your life. Learn more at areyouok.org.au.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
And now on the Space Show, we're going to have some Australian space news. Over in South Australia, the planned launch of a German rocket fueled by paraffin has been delayed until tomorrow. The 11.5-metre-tall SR-75 rocket is expected to fly to an altitude of 50 kilometres before falling back to the Canuba Test Range near Ceduna. This is how 7 News in Adelaide reported the preparations.
The finishing touch has been made to South Australia's new spaceport. The Canuba Test Range launches into action next week, with a German company testing a hybrid propulsion rocket on Aboriginal lands.
40 kilometres northwest of Ceduna. Here, many a local footy legends launched a towering torpedo punt. But just a short distance from here, the kids will be hoping for something even more spectacular as testing of the launch site continues. German company High Impulse is using Southern Launch's facility to fire its newly arrived SR-75 rocket to be attached underneath this movable launch rail.
So you can lift it up and point it in the direction you want.
The launch rail is used to position that rocket in the perfect place so that it goes where it's predicted to land.
It's a game changer in so many ways. Jobs and educational opportunities for the local Kanibba Aboriginal community and the trialling of a new and less volatile and safer Jeff propulsion system. And a new phenomenon called in-space manufacturing. High Impulse is testing a potentially safer and cheaper fuel.
This is the first time where we will try our new rocket propulsion system in flight. We're using paraffin wax, basically candle wax, as a fuel.
It's combined with liquid oxygen. Kanibba's vast range and Southern Launch's two launch sites here and at Whalers Way further south are extremely attractive to those launching rockets into space.
I think this is one of the outstanding points here.
There are huge benefits for those who own this land.
We've been waiting for a long time, and it'll bring employment to our community, and it'll bring educational tools for our kids.
And some benefits are yet to come from a revolutionary phenomenon called in-space manufacturing, where microgravity in an orbiting capsule like this one can change the composition of certain materials, leading to life-saving drugs and enhanced chips for supercomputers.
That is actually using the advantages of having no gravity. You can use these conditions to build something that you cannot do on Earth.
But for the Kanibba kids, the appeal's a little less complicated.
Rockets are really good to, shoot off.
Ron Candelars, 7 News.
At 50 kilometres, this is an atmospheric test flight. But wait for it. Watch for news reports saying that this is a space mission. To qualify as a space flight, the SR-75 would need to reach 100 kilometres altitude. Still, a paraffin liquid oxygen rocket is a newsworthy event. If it does occur tomorrow, it will be just before dawn when it launches. By the way, Southern Launch has signed an agreement with the United States aerospace company SpaceWorks to allow the landing of orbital reentry devices at the Kanibba Test Range. The range has an area of 41,000 square kilometres, and the idea is to allow the rapid return of experiments from orbital vehicles such as the International Space Station. And no word yet from Gilmour Space in Queensland on when their IRIS orbital launch vehicle will have its maiden launch. The vehicle stands ready at the Bowen Orbital Spaceport but cannot be launched until it receives a launch permit from the Australian Space Agency. The 25-metre tall rocket has a diameter of 1.5 metres. A note from Chief Executive Officer Adam Gilmour advised everyone to check on his social media posts for launch updates. However, because the space show has never signed up to the Twitterverse, Elon Musk has blocked us from reading posts on X. In other words, we have been X-communicated. Now, the IRIS rocket is named after the dwarf planet IRIS, which was discovered in 2005. With an equatorial diameter of about 2,400 kilometres, IRIS is a little smaller than the Moon. Its average distance from the Sun is about 68 times further from the Earth than from the Sun than the Earth is. Well, the Kids Learning Tube have done a thing about the dwarf planet IRIS and its moon, Dysnomia. Here's what they have to say about it.
My name is IRIS. I am a dwarf planet. The furthest dwarf from the sun the humans found yet. On January 5th in 2005, the Caltech Observatory had brought me to life. A team led by astronomers My name is Ceres. I am a dwarf planet. The furthest north from the sun the humans found yet. Minus 390 is my average degree. If you made it to my surface, then you'd probably freeze. The Snowy is my one natural satellite. See, it means lawlessness and it is always orbiting me. I'm 27% more massive than your Pluto. Yeah, Pluto is slightly larger than I am, you know. I take 557 Earth years to orbit the sun. When I orbit, I leave the Kuiper Belt on my run. My name is Ceres. I am a dwarf planet. The furthest north from the sun the humans found yet.
It's Ian Healy, and I'm here to talk to you about back pain and Kesar. If you're one of the 80% of Australians who suffer from back pain, it's tempting to do nothing, but this can cause weaknesses down the road. The best place to start with back pain is exercise, and the best place to exercise is Kesar. Kesar's physios and Swiss-designed strength training equipment help you build strength in a supervised environment. I go to Kesar, and you can too.
Book at one of our 19 clinics across Victoria. Visit keyser.com.au.
Southern FM sponsor.
Are you playing renovation roulette? Deadly asbestos lies hidden in one-third of Aussie homes. It can be found in any home built or renovated before 1990, lurking in walls, behind tiles, under floor coverings, in roofing. Asbestos. It was used everywhere. So if you're a renovator or a tradie, you could be risking your life and the lives of others. Respect asbestos, because it's not worth the risk. Visit asbestosawareness.com.au to find out what you need to know.
You have the right to not remain silent. You have the right to be treated fairly by police. You have the right to not be discriminated against because of your race, because of your sexuality. You have the right to speak out. You have the right to report anything that police do to deny your rights. Call IBAC or visit our website to safely report police misconduct or provide information anonymously.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
And this is the Space Show. Now, there's no word yet on the fate of the Australian-built Optimus satellite that was launched several months ago and never heard from. Well, a crew member aboard the Optimus satellite was Valiant Space. And we're going to do a little profile about them now.
Located in Brisbane, Australia, Valiant Space is a space propulsion company whose purpose is to build a smarter space for a better Earth. The company produces a wide range of products that enable in-space maneuverability, including valves, thrusters, and full propulsion systems for customers both domestically and internationally. With its wide range of propulsion technologies, Valiant is focused on propelling critical space-based infrastructure by allowing satellites to get on orbit sooner, extend their lifetime, and improve sustainability through deorbiting and collision avoidance.
If you listen to the ABC, you may well have heard of Valiant in 2022.
We've developed an in-space thruster, which is an important part of what satellites need to move once they're in space. So you can think of that in the same way as you catch a 737 from Brisbane to Sydney, and then once you get to Sydney, you need to take a taxi or an Uber to get to your hotel. We're building the rocket engines that are that taxi for satellites once they're in space.
How did you get started on this project and how long have you been working on it?
Yeah, so the company was formed officially in 2020. That's when we incorporated. But as a team, we all came together in 2017. We're actually all at university at the time. And we all had a passion and a drive to want to build rocket engines before we graduated. We achieved that. And then through the process of that journey, we found a market opportunity with these in-space thrusters, and we've been growing the company ever since.
You must be so excited to be involved with SpaceX.
Yes, that's right. So we have our launch that is coming up in December. That's for a solenoid valve. I have one prepared here. And that valve is going to be on board a satellite with another Australian company called Skycraft. And they're launching on board of this SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket in December. And then mid-next year, we'll be launching a full propulsion system with the full thruster. So like this one that I'm showing here. And this is what's going to be launching mid-next year and will be a full demonstration of our technology.
And so tell me about the conditions that both of these inventions have been tested under so far.
Yes, so there's obviously a bumpy ride to get to space. The rockets are very big and they have big engines which generate a lot of vibration, a lot of force. And so on the ground, we've been conducting a variety of different tests on our technologies, including hot fire tests on the engines. Right now, actually, my colleagues Michael and Ben are actually out at the test site testing one of these engines as we speak. And then we do other vibration tests and load tests to ensure that our parts are really going to withstand that violent launch.
And so you are confident at this stage that they will indeed do that, just that?
Absolutely. So it's always important, especially with products going to space, to make sure that they're going to work before you send them. It's not like you can send a maintenance crew up quite easily, at least not in the foreseeable future. And so, yes, we've made sure we put the products through their paces to guarantee that they're going to work once they get into space.
The company has given this description of their VS1 thruster.
We use non-toxic nitrous oxide and propane to provide comparable performance to hydrazine-based systems, but without the need for high-cost handling infrastructure. With a significantly higher thrust compared to electric propulsion, our thrusters can perform fast-acting orbit raising and collision avoidance maneuvers, ensuring your satellite assets come online quickly and for longer. Our low-cost propulsion solutions will save you money at every step of your mission life cycle by leveraging a simplified design, rapid manufacturing methods, low-cost propellants, and by always keeping your satellites in their optimal orbit.
Now, what is the purpose of Valiant Space? Well, in their own words,
Valiant exists to provide products and services that will propel critical space technologies and infrastructure deeper into the cosmos, opening up commercial and exploration opportunities out to the Moon, Mars, and beyond. With our first domain of focus being propulsion systems and components, we are beginning our journey to solving the space industry's ever-increasing transportation and congestion challenges on orbit.
At a meeting of the Space Association of Australia in South Melbourne, Valiant Space was our guest. Andrew Yusinski is the CEO and founder of Valiant Space, which, as you heard, comes from Brisbane. Here's what he had to say.
G'day, everyone. My name's Andrew. I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders of Valiant Space. And we're developing technology to land payloads on the moon. And to give you a bit of an idea as to why we're doing that, let me take you back to 2007. And that's when the Google Lunar X Prize started. And out of all the groups that participated, SpaceIL from Israel was the only one who got the closest to the moon. And at Valiant, we were all really inspired by their journey, and we all watched on as the landing attempt began for that mission. And unfortunately, minutes until touchdown, there was a failure, and it was a software failure caused by human error. And this was a $100 million mission, and yet there was still insufficient means to validate and reduce the kind of risks that put the mission in jeopardy and ultimately caused the catastrophic failure. Because at the end of the day, you can't do a practice moon landing mission. It's just too expensive, too prohibitive. And when you can't practice something cheaply or rapidly, you can't really get that much better at it. And so you can't get better at landing on the moon if that's the case. And that's when Valiant Space was born, from myself, and my co-founders. And we want to ultimately help humanity get better at landing on the moon much more regularly. And simply put, we want to take the moonshot mentality out of a moonshot. We want to make it significantly easier. So the obvious follow-on question to that is, how do we do that? How do we achieve it? What are the necessary steps to make going back to the moon a more routine task? Well, we're solving these high-risk and high-cost problems by introducing the means to boost the reliability of these very complex systems that Adam touched on, the challenges that exist with rocket building. It's very high, high-stakes challenges. We're building the ability to boost that reliability of those systems here on Earth before they actually fly. And fundamentally, lunar missions themselves, they are doable. Gone are the days of needing to be a superpower. The new space approach has meant that a lot of commercial opportunities previously unforeseen in space are now being opened up. Going to the moon will become a commercially viable endeavor. And I'm sure many different ventures that we can't even think of today will come out of that ability to go back. But at this point, things need to get a lot cheaper, a lot less risky, and a lot more reliable. So to achieve this, we're taking on the reusability philosophy, but not quite in the way that you might think from someone like SpaceX. We're building a hopper vehicle. So this is a reusable vertical takeoff and landing rocket, which is terrestrially based, which is going to allow rapid testing of the propulsion systems, the control systems, and the vehicle architecture overall to be able to achieve the precision landings and hops in and around the moon that we want to provide to our customers. So the hopper itself will take off, fly a specified trajectory, and then land, all the while gathering data on system performances throughout the flight. And so should there be any adjustments needing to be made on just after a flight has been conducted, those tweaks can be made on site, and the hopper can fly that exact same trajectory with a turnaround within the same day. And that's giving an unprecedented level of hardware-in-the-loop simulation and rapid prototyping that really hasn't been possible for these types of spacecraft systems previously. So this is critical because it helps build that operational and full system experience and understanding that you need when taking on these challenges. Because ultimately, an active lunar economy depends upon the ease of access to get there. Just like access to space, and just how we've seen in recent years, how all these ventures and capabilities in low Earth orbit have been unlocked because of companies like SpaceX who have reduced the cost to get there significantly. And other companies such as Gilmour and other small satellite launches are bringing that capability more and more. And right now, on the lunar perspective, that innovation that we've seen in access to space in general is currently getting blocked by the expense and the risk that is associated with testing those systems. So that's where Valiant Space fits in with our value, is that we can test those systems and build them and operate a lot quicker to be able to get customers' payloads to the moon with cutting-edge technology. So this kind of leads well into my next point, which is on collaboration, which is another huge part of the journey. Beresheet is an excellent example of where collaboration works really well. And in our case, we need a ride to space ground tracking equipment. We need scientific payloads and testing facilities. And all these capabilities are actually getting built here in Australia, which is really exciting to see. And we want to inspire others to take on these kinds of moon challenges and to collaborate and build a capability that will see humanity prosper in cislunar space and in deep space overall. And we also think it's really important that the government support that exists nurtures these ambitious ventures. And so we're very excited to hear more about what lies ahead of us with the Moon to Mars initiative. And we think that a lot of our projects are fantastic opportunities that align very closely with the desired outcomes of the initiative. And of course, right now we're targeting the moon first, but our pathway and our technology development will enable further exploration to Mars and beyond and to other planetary bodies. So we're really excited, and we know that this can all be done in Australia. Of course, it's an international effort, but Australia can have a significant impact on the global industry, and we want to really take part in that. But I guess a little bit more of a specific update as to what we've been working on so far. We've been focusing our efforts on the rocket propulsion systems. You might have seen our most recent hot fire test of our liquid fuel rocket, which was successful. That is going to power our Hopper vehicle. So that's our first iteration. We're going to continue developing that until it's ready for our first Hopper vehicle. We're also working hard on the other systems needed. And so, yeah, definitely stay tuned to hear more about our progress there. I've spoken a bit about the collaboration and some of the first few problems we're going to be solving. And we're really eager to talk with whoever wants to be updated, get in touch or collaborate with us and ultimately share the journey with us to the moon.
Andrew Yusinski, you've got a question from Andrew Treib. Do you have any comments regarding the Trump announcement and your intentions about the moon enablers? I guess this relates to your Hopper system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's referring to the mining, and one of our potential customers is obviously mining companies. We're currently not building the landers that would be necessary to haul tons and tons of moon rock back to Earth, but we would potentially be able to enable prospecting of the moon. So, of course, we'll be operating under whatever the regulations that exist around the logistics of that. We've got a long timeline until we reach that point, though. In regards to that specific question, I don't have any particular comment since that's not something that's on the horizon just yet. And I'm not quite sure what lies in the future in that regard. We do believe, though, that the capabilities that we're building will be very well aligned with what mining companies would want to utilize. Like I said, we'd only operate under whatever the regulations that exist. Don't have any specific comments there, unfortunately.
Forgive my limited understanding of space mining. I don't really believe the practicality of mining things off Earth and bringing to Earth is really where mining is really where it's at. It's more off Earth mining for use in off Earth applications, for example, fuel or building structures or spacecraft and those types of things. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking to the meeting of the Space Association of Australia, that was Andrew Yusinski, the CEO and founder of Valiant Space, which hails from Brisbane. And they are one of many, many companies who are hanging on word from Space Machines Company about the fate of the Ultima satellite, which does appear to have failed. However, one can always hope. Just time enough to tell you about the Space Show's website. Now, the Space Show has a home on the internet. Yes. It's at space.southernfm.com.au. So that's space.southernfm.com.au. And you can find there more than 1,800 features for your listening enjoyment, and some photographs and things of things we've been doing. So once again, we invite you to visit space.southernfm.com.au to find out more about the Space Show. And to find out about the Space Association, which is a presenter of this program, you could visit space.asn.au. So that's very simple, space.asn.au to find out more about the Space Show and the Space Association. We'll have more Australian space news coming up in the next few weeks, and also hopefully we'll have some news about the the Boeing Starliner, not to be confused with Elon Musk's Starship. Anyway, I'm Andrew Rennie. This has been The Space Show, and we're going to be handing over in a few seconds to that wonderful, wonderful program by Nick Black, Purple Haze.